Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Next Tuesday, November 3rd, is Election Day, and we've got a lot of things happening in San Francisco. The outcome will have ripple effects beyond the city. 11 propositions are on the ballot. 5 attempt to address the city's affordable housing crisis. The measures include a bond for affordable housing, further regulations of short-term rentals, and a moratorium on development in the Mission District. While housing has surfaced as the leading issue concerning San Francisco residents, voters will also decide the next mayor, supervisor for District 3, and other propositions, including how clean energy is defined. So today we are going to open the lines. We'd love to hear from you. What do you want to know about the propositions on the ballot? And what are your thoughts on voter turnout next week? I'm so afraid that it might be between 15% to 20%, and I hope I'm wrong. Joining us to talk about what's at stake for the future of San Francisco and the Greater Bay Area are two guests. Tim Redmond is founder and editor of 48 Hills, the official publication of the nonprofit San Francisco Progressive Media Company. 48 Hills is an online news site. Tim recently acquired the rights through another nonprofit to the Bay Guardian, where he was editor for 32 years, and he joins me in studio. Hi, Tim. Thanks for coming
back. Hi, good morning, Rose. Happy
nice
to be here.
Nice to have you. And Michelle Myers is director for the San Francisco Bay chapter of the Sierra Club, with over 30,000 members in Alameda, Contra Costa, Marin, and San Francisco counties. And they've been working to protect the environment of the Bay Area for over 90 years. And Michelle also joins me in studio. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Rose, good to see you.
Good to see you. Thank you for coming in. So first off, Tim, what's at stake in this election? It's a very important one.
Well, the biggest thing that's at stake in this election is the housing balance in San Francisco. That's what a lot of this is about. And, you know, there are various different measures on the ballot. There's a bond act that will help somewhat. It's $310 million. That's not going to solve the housing crisis in San Francisco, but it'll create, you know, a couple of thousand affordable units, possibly. And then I think, even more important, there's a measure that would, and I know you've talked about this on your show, that would further regulate short-term rentals in a way that I think will probably free up 5,000 housing units almost immediately if it passes.
Prop F.
And then, of course, we have the balance of power on the Board of Supervisors, and in a sense, the balance of power at City Hall at stake in District 3.
Okay, and so we're going to elaborate on all of those, although I will say, Proposition F, we did have a debate last week, and you can find that at yourcallradio.org. We wanted to talk about the other 10 because some of them are getting attention and some are getting absolutely no attention, and they are all important. And what about you, Michelle? What is at stake in this election?
I completely agree with Tim. We're talking about a housing crisis in San Francisco, and there are 5 measures on the ballot that specifically address our housing, our shortage of affordable housing, and it's really important that people get out and vote to maintain an affordable, sustainable San Francisco. And part of a sustainable San Francisco is the launch of a program called Clean Power SF, and there's actually 2 different measures on the ballot, G and H, which are both relevant to Clean Power SF, which should be a renewable energy provider for San Franciscans as soon as early next year. We're encouraging people to vote no on G and yes on H. And both of these measures have to do with the marketing of renewable energy, and we can talk more about that.
Okay. So why don't we dive in, since housing is at the top of everyone's minds. Let's talk about this. So San Francisco earned a score of 10 out of 100 for its affordable housing. This is according to the California Association of Realtors. At a minimum, in order to buy a home in San Francisco, your income would need to be about $260,000. And I walk into open houses now just out of curiosity. Last week in the Mission, 23rd and Valencia, a beautiful Victorian, a small two-bedroom is going for $1.8 million. The unit next to it is going for $2.8 million. Just to give you a sense of what people are facing, a one bedroom, $3,500 if you're lucky now, if you're going to rent. So let's talk about Proposition A. This is the housing bond issue. If approved, it would authorize the city to issue up to $310 million in bonds to fund affordable housing programs. I live in San Francisco like so many others. I've been bombarded with material. It seems like A is not controversial at all.
Pretty much everyone's in favor of Prop A in the political world. All 11 supervisors, the mayor, pretty much every group out there supports Prop A. The only issue with Prop A is that it's a bond act, so it needs 2/3. And the reason we're getting bombarded with stuff is if it's a low turnout election, the more conservative voters tend to vote in every single election, and some of them will vote no just because they don't want to spend public money. On the most popular bond act, you still get 25% no vote. So we're fighting over the difference between 25 and between, you know, 66 and 75 is what we're trying to get here. And we need to get that 25% to not become 35%, or it's going to be really close. So that's why we're being bombarded with stuff. Also, as part of a deal to stop tighter regulations on market rate housing, all of the market rate developers in the city promised to put money into this thing and support it. So there's a lot of money behind it. Everybody's hoping for the best, and that's the challenge, is that you know, two-thirds requirement.
So two-thirds requirement and $310 million. A lot of people say that this is far too low.
Oh, it is. It's way too low, and it's way too low for a reason. I mean, we need a couple of billion dollars in affordable housing money in San Francisco. The reason it's $310 million is that this mayor has taken the position that we are not going to put any bonds on the ballot that raise taxes. And so we can't put bonds on the ballot until we pay off existing ones to keep the balance at the same level. So all that we have left under the cap right now is $310 million. So, you know, if the mayor had put a $1 billion bond act on, of course, I would argue, as somebody who owns property in San Francisco, that my property taxes are radically too low, and that property taxes in general are way too low because of Prop 13. And there's nothing wrong with saying we're going to put a $1 billion bond act on and everyone's going to have to pay $20 a year in higher property taxes. Well, guess what? Anybody who can afford a home in San Francisco can afford higher property taxes. So, but he didn't want to do that politically. That's not something that Ed Lee was willing to go out and push for. So that's why we're stuck with a relatively modest affordable housing bond.
And if Ed Lee is reelected and Prop A passes, he says he will use the $310 million to construct and renovate 30,000 affordable housing units.
A lot of that is renovating existing public housing units that are in too bad shape for anybody to live in. 30,000 is a big number when you think that it costs about $500,000 to $700,000 to build a housing unit in San Francisco now, and we have $300 million, do the math. That's not $30,000. I think he says he's going to do that over the next 10 to 15 years, that's his long-term goal, but we're not going to get that from Prop A. Nothing against Prop A. I'm voting in favor of it. I'm sure Michelle's voting in favor. I'm sure everybody, most of the people who are listening here are. The message that I would give you is some people will vote against it, and it needs two-thirds. So if you care about this, we can talk about this over and over, Rose. If you care about this, go to the polls and vote.
Again, two-thirds, and since it's an off election, there's a lot of concern that we're going to have low voter turnout. Michelle, anything else to add about Prop A?
I would just say that, you know, this is a step in the right direction, but we do need to go further to make sure that we have a valid enough affordable housing that's affordable not just to low-income people, but moderate and middle-income people in the city of San Francisco, and we need to do much more than Prop A, but Prop A is an important measure. We need to pass it.
Okay, and again, it needs two-thirds majority. And that is Michelle Meyer. She's director for the San Francisco Bay chapter of the Sierra Club. Tim Redmond is founder and editor of 48 Hills, an online publication providing reporting about San Francisco. He recently acquired rights through another nonprofit to the Bay Guardian, where he was editor for 32 years. And I want to give out the phone number early because we are going to open the lines. If you have any questions about the San Francisco election and what it will mean for the greater Bay Area, we'd love to hear from you. Again, we did have a debate about Prop F last week. This would further regulate short-term rentals like Airbnb. You can find that at yourcallradio.org, and you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Okay, let's talk about Proposition I. If approved, this would impose an 18-month moratorium, meaning a complete suspension of city permits on certain types of development projects in the Mission District, and it would authorize a majority of the Board of Supervisors to extend the moratorium for another 12 months. Tim, the board already tried to do something like this.
Yeah. In fact, what the board had before it was a 45-day moratorium. And if the board had just been willing to suspend things for 45 days and give the community a chance to breathe, we wouldn't have an 18-month moratorium on the ballot. But the developers were so angry about this, and the mayor was so unhappy with this, that they shot it down. We could not get the votes for a 45-day moratorium. So Mission District activists, who are, frankly, I think, freaked out by the level of displacement that's going on in the Mission, and it's frightening, scrambled to get this on the November ballot and gathered a tremendous number of signatures in like 3 weeks. I mean, it was very remarkable that with no money they did it. So this is now on the ballot. And once again, the developers are freaking out. They say if it happens in the Mission, it'll spread to the rest of the city, just like international communism was going to spread if Vietnam fell. You know, oh my God, this is going to be the end of everything. The reality is that there are no big projects that are going to happen in the next 18 months in the Mission anyway. So this isn't really going to, it's not going to stop development. It's going to give the community a chance to breathe. And it's going to, I think, equally important, force the city to come up with a neighborhood stabilization plan.
So I'm getting a lot of this information from Ballotpedia. Those opposed to I, Supervisor Scott Weiner wrote the ballot argument in opposition to I. Mayor Ed Lee and Supervisors Mark Farrell, Julie Christensen, and Katie Tang also oppose I. And then in terms of funders, and maybe you both can help us out with this because I'm not familiar with these names, Robert Rosania gave $180,000.
Robert Rosania owns a site on 16th, or is trying to develop a site on 16th and Mission. He's with Maximus Realty, and that is what's known to critics as the monster in the Mission. It's a huge luxury condo project at 16th and Mission. The problem is Robert Rosania appears to be in some type of litigation with the property owners, and his option to buy that property expired, and it's not clear what's going to happen there anyway, certainly not in the next 18 months. I mean, he doesn't even own the property anymore, I think, and the owner is fighting him, and there's this whole nasty thing that's going to take 2 or 3 years to sort out in court. So by the time he gets that sorted out, this Prop I will have expired anyway.
Lennar Holmes gave $82,000, California Association of Realtors $37,000, the Taboni Group $25,000. As of October 13th, $919,000 has been donated in opposition to I. And then in support of I, you've got the funders, they've raised $136,000. The Yerba Buena Consortium, $25,000, and then it's smaller from there, $5,000 from Unite Here, Local 2. Supporters, Committee to Save the Mission, the Housing Advocacy Organization, Tenants and Owners Development Corporation, the San Francisco Labor Council. What about the Sierra Club?
The Sierra Club is supporting Proposition I, so we support the moratorium and the Mission. And I think what's being painted here is, community groups, nonprofits, housing rights advocates up against large developers. And that's a story that's woven throughout a lot of the issues on the ballot this year and in I think, the housing crisis in San Francisco overall. So we see a lot of money developers coming in and opposing I, while groups like the Sierra Club that are fighting for a sustainable San Francisco are supporting it.
And Tim Cullen, the ED of the San Francisco Housing Action Coalition, says, I don't get how a moratorium is going to solve anything. We already don't produce enough housing, so let's wait a year or two, put a moratorium on new supply, and see if that'll improve. I wish someone could explain to me how that works economically, he says.
Well, that gets into one of the biggest debates in San Francisco, which is, does the construction of luxury condominiums, housing that will be priced, Rose, as you were talking about the prices that we're seeing now, we're talking about condominiums are going to cost $1 million, $2 million. Does the construction of that trickle down and help the housing crisis? Now, what the city has done in the past few years is essentially say, if you're going to build these luxury condominiums, you have to build some affordable housing. But on the other hand, the city's own studies have shown that every 100 units of luxury housing you build creates a demand for 20 or 30 units of affordable housing just by itself. So there's an argument that the more luxury housing we build, the further behind we get, and the worse the housing crisis becomes. So that's the discussion that I've had with Tim Cullen. You know, he says supply and demand will solve the problem. Just build enough. Well, we just saw a study yesterday out of the Board of Supervisors budget analyst office that said in order to have stabilized housing prices, we would have had to build 400,000 housing units in San Francisco over the last 20 years. That's what it would have taken to get us to where we should be. So I'm not sure that any reasonable amount of market rate housing is going to solve the crisis, but that's what the debate's about.
We also got a new report. I just saw this in the Examiner this morning. This is according to a new report issued by city economist Ted Egan. San Francisco's Mission District will see a massive drop in the number of Latino residents, while higher income earners will increase during the next decade. And to be specific, the Mission District will lose about 8,000 Latino residents over the next 10 years.
That is the fear. And that is what we've already been seeing. That's what we've seen over the last 10 years. And that's why people in the community say, give us a minute. It's happening too fast. We've always had gentrification in the city. There's always been gentrification and displacement, certainly, you know, since the 60s. But It's happening so fast now. It's happening at such a breakneck speed that the city planners don't even have a chance to say, wait, wait, what can we do about this? So the idea of a moratorium is slow it down for a second. Mm-hmm. And let's see if we can come up with a community stabilization plan that will prevent that kind of displacement.
We're talking today about the election in San Francisco, which will have ripple effects beyond San Francisco. Tim Redmond is founder and editor of 48 Hills, an online progressive news site. He just acquired rights through a nonprofit to the Bay Guardian, where he was editor for 32 years. Michelle Myers is director for the San Francisco Bay chapter of the Sierra Club. And the Guardian came out with its endorsement slate. The Sierra Club also did. A lot of different groups did. There's so much information out there. Ballotpedia is really good. It brings in... It's a very clear description of the propositions. It tells you who's supporting, who's funding, who opposes it, and then who's spending money to oppose it. A very good website. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. Are you planning to vote? If you're not because you're confused, we hope we can change your mind. There's so many important things on this ballot. We'd love to hear from you. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's go to Erica in San Francisco. Hi, Erica. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A little background quickly. I'm a student. My husband's a welder. We have two small kids, 6 months old, a 3-year-old, and we are currently in the process of being evicted. I grew up in San Francisco. My husband's been here for over 20 years. So we're a part of, you know, the story of people being pushed out. And I think, you know, our time here is at a limit, but I feel very, I'm very emotional about this election, and I'm wondering if you can advise on some talking points, some bullet points to talk to friends, to talk to strangers about with these propositions. I've noticed among the people I know, especially with Prop F, it really feels divided. It's renters versus homeowners, and how can we talk across that, you know, that line.
Well, thank you, Erica. And just to let you know, we are going to do a show soon about what renters are facing across the Bay Area, especially those who are being evicted. And that's coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Well, Tim. The talking points I would use on Prop F is I would say that this is the most important housing measure on the ballot, even more important than the housing bond, because if Airbnb and the other similar sites are forced to only list legal registered units, there will be a drop of probably 5,000 short-term rentals in San Francisco. And these are places where tenants have been evicted and entire buildings have been turned into short-term rentals. Not to get into the debate on that, but if Prop F passes, it will increase the available rental housing stock by more than the affordable housing bond.
So we know at this point that 5,000 units are being rented out through Airbnb, empty units.
No, here's what we know.
We couldn't come up with that number on our debate show.
There are about 6,000 to 7,000 units rented on Airbnb and other sites right now. Of those, about 600 are legally registered. All right. So I am saying that some of them that are being rented out, they're perfectly legal. They're just somebody renting a room in their home, which is just fine, and they never bothered to register it. But a large, large number of them are not registered because they're not legal.
Okay, so then, because we got a lot of calls on Prop F, and we won't spend that much time on it because I want to get to the others, but we heard from a lot of people who said, I can't make ends meet, I'm renting out a room, and I rent it for 200 days, and this would limit me to 75. So why didn't the people who wrote Prop F specifically target those who are renting out entire homes rather than just a room?
Well, it was a complicated process of writing Prop F, and I think the people who wrote it right now, actually, you can't rent it out for 200 days. Right now, the limit is 125 or something, 95. There's a limit right now on how many days. So already, you can't do that. The limit is only decreased a little bit, 10 or 15%. Right, so if you're renting your room out 200 days, you're already violating the law. So what the main thing, and I think that this debate over whether it's 75 days or 90 days or 100, I think that's missing the point. The point is you shouldn't be able to rent out any place that isn't your primary residence. And the only way we can prove that is if everybody has to register and Airbnb can't list sites that aren't registered. That's the only – it's about enforcement.
Do you think that it would be getting a lot more support if it's specifically focused on entire homes rather than rooms in people's homes?
Well, it might, but it's really hard to do that legally. Legally, all we can do right now is to say – I mean, it's hard to separate. You know, like right now, they're trying to say there's a certain number of times when you can rent out a room if you're at home, and then you can rent it out a certain number of days if you're not at home. How are we supposed to know? So the only way to enforce this is to say the hosting platforms – have to be responsible for only listing legal units. And then people who are doing it right have no problems.
Michelle?
I'd also just like to say rooms in people's homes are also viable housing stock for permanent residents. So in my time in San Francisco, I've had roommates, most of it, in order to make it affordable for me. And if someone's renting out their home for more than 200 days, maybe they should consider getting a roommate.
Right. Well, we did a show about Prop F last week again, and on the no side, they have raised almost $9 million. 96.6% has been spent by Airbnb. On the yes side, they've raised about $350,000. And the Chronicle had a piece just a couple days ago about spending, and it looks like the yes side is almost out of money. The no side has about $1.8 million in the bank. So that's Prop F. Again, you can find that debate at yourcallradio.org. And any other tips for Erica about trying to convince her friends and family to vote, Michelle?
Also, we do have some great talking points on the Sierra Club website. So if you go to sierraclub.org/San Francisco/Bay/chapter, you can find some talking points on all of these measures.
Okay. And again, it's that they've got their slate, and they take all of the props and put them into just a couple of sentences so it's easy to read. So thank you, Erica. And I hope you can listen to our show about renters coming up in the next couple weeks. Let's go next to Tom in San Francisco. Hi, Tom.
Yes, on the housing point, we have to change a value system where the owner of the piece of property has gold in San Francisco, and we have to start turning it over to the community. What makes the value of the piece of property in San Francisco is that it's in San Francisco. If you took that same dirt and you took it out and moved it somewhere else to the Eastern Hills, it's worthless. So instead of having owners of property and big developers claim, you know, this is what we have to do, we need to have a new community balance where when you build a building, instead of having it open, open market to everybody in the world except for people in San Francisco, if there's 100 units, 30% are open market to the world. Anybody can rent them, Silicon Valley. But then 10% can go to the 30-year residents in the local zip codes around that building that are 65 years and older. We keep some of the people in the locale into the homes. The next 15% could be if you're a 20-year resident around that local zip code of that building, if you're in the Tenderloin, and you've been there for 20 years, you've got 15% of those units. If you're a 30-year resident in San Francisco and you're senior, 65, and you're old, 5% of those of the new apartments or condos can be for you. And then there's a 10% you could go.
Well, thank you for calling. Sorry to cut you off, but we have to go to break. And Tim, there are some nonprofits. They're collectives, but that basically buy buildings to keep them under rent control for the foreseeable future.
The San Francisco Land Trust does that, and that's a very good idea. I mean, I actually think that we should do more of that. I think that the city, with some of the bond money and with other general fund money, the city ought to be buying up as much property, as much rental housing as it can in San Francisco and taking it off the market, because I think we're seeing that the private market isn't providing the solution.
Well, and I just pitched a show about that, so we're also going to hopefully do a show about that in the next month or so. So thank you for that phone call. Today we are talking about next Tuesday's election in San Francisco. The outcome will have ripple effects beyond the city. If you have any questions about the 11 props on the ballot, we would love to hear from you. We will also talk about District 3, and we'll talk about the mayor's race. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
Many ways to join in today's conversation on Your Call with Rose Aguilar on the phone or by sending an email. The address is feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you can leave a message on the website yourcallradio.org. If you'd like to join us live on the air and talk to Rose and her guests, the toll-free number, 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK. Coming up at 11 o'clock, the BBC's World Have Your Say. Following that, at noon today, it's Ira Glass and This American Life.
is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about how California can end fossil fuel extraction and embrace 100% wind and solar. Stanford scientist Mark Jacobson and the Center for Biological Diversity's Cassie Siegel say that in order to avoid climate change's worst dangers, California must halt fracking, move away from dirty fossil fuel extraction, and quickly embrace a clean energy, 100% wind and solar future. So how can we get there? That's tomorrow. Friday, it's our media roundtable. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we're talking about next Tuesday's election in San Francisco. The outcome will have ripple effects beyond the city. 11 propositions are on the ballot. 5 attempt to address the city's affordable housing crisis. We also have energy propositions. We've got a couple questions about that. We'll discuss that in just a few minutes. The supervisor race for District 3 is one of the most expensive supervisor races in the city. Very important. We'll talk about that. And then the people running against Mayor Ed Lee are not getting much media attention, but we are going to also decide our next mayor. KALW's Cross Currents has interviewed all of the mayors, and you can find those interviews at KALW.org. And you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Joelle writes, we've been very dependent on the Bay Guardian's voter recommendation cheat sheet to assist us on voting day. Where is it this year?
It is at sfbg.com.
All right.
We were able to get the rights back in time to do that. So the Bay Guardian's cheat sheet is available, www.sfbg, like San Francisco, bayguardian.com.
And are you going to do any more reporting for The Guardian, or is it just you now have the rights to the...
Oh, we can do more reporting for The Guardian.
Okay.
Right now, we're trying to preserve the archives and get the website in a safe, sustainable place. But we will eventually.
Okay. So be sure to check that out. Thank you for the email. Tom was calling about housing, and we talked about nonprofits, or the city actually, buying up properties to ensure that they're rent-controlled for the future, foreseeable future. Let's talk about Proposition K, City of San Francisco Housing Development on Surplus Public Lands. A yes vote means that you want the city to expand the allowable uses of surplus property to include building affordable housing for a range of households, from those who are homeless or those with very low income to those with incomes up to 120% of the area median income. The Sierra Club is saying yes on K.
Most definitely.
Why? Explain K.
It fits into the rest of the housing crisis in San Francisco that we were talking about. There are lands that the city owns, and public lands should be used for public good. And allowing the surplus lands to be entered into development that is sustainable development, this means transit-oriented development, this means development that allows median, moderate and low-income people to stay in the city of San Francisco is a great use for public land.
Agreed. I mean, the highest and best use for any public land in San Francisco right now is housing. I mean, that is the number one crisis that we need more than anything else. So that's, you know, I'm with the Sierra Club on this one.
And Supervisor Jane Kim authored the argument in support of Prop K. It's also being supported by the San Francisco Labor Council and the South Beach Mission Bay Business. The Examiner endorsed it. The Chronicle endorsed it. And then on the other side, again, we're talking about Prop K. The opponents include the San Francisco Taxpayers Association. What kind of tangible effects will this have, Prop K?
There are a number of parcels that the city owns that we're not using for anything much right now. And right now, the law does not allow us. There's a set of criteria what you can use surplus public land for. And, of course, I think what the Taxpayers Association wants is to sell it and make money.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
But that's a very bad idea. You should never sell public land because you never get it back. Right. So this would essentially allow us to do something that pretty much everybody agrees is a good idea.
And who makes these decisions? If Prop K passes?
If Prop K passes, it would first go through the department. For example, if the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission owns land that they're not using, first the commission would have to declare that land surplus, and then the Board of Supervisors would have to declare it surplus, and then the Mayor's Office of Housing would oversee constructing housing there. Now, obviously, for better or for worse, the city is not going to build housing there. The city is going to work with some nonprofit to build housing there because that's how the city works.
All right. So again, that is Proposition K. And we have a caller on the line about affordable housing. So let's hear from Pat in San Francisco. Hi, Pat. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I have a two-part question. It's really mostly about Prop F. One part is that when we lose a lot of the low-income housing that we've been losing, we also lose rent control stock. And I want to ask the panelists whether they know, is there any legal way to make sure that some of the new low-income housing is rent controlled? And my second part has to do with low-income housing where there's been a problem in the past where you put some low-income housing into a mega project. And I'm thinking here of downtown at Rincon Center. The developer was forced to put some low-income rental units in that in order to be able to build. And then after a certain number of years, when the developer paid back the city the money they had loaned to him, he no longer was required to have any low-income units. He jacked the rents up to market rate. This happened at least 10 years ago, and a lot of people were thrown out of their housing. So is there any way to make sure that the new low-income housing coming online remains low-income in perpetuity rather than is only low-income for a couple of years? So that's my two-part question.
Thank you, Pat.
It's a very good question. And yes, there is a way in terms of keeping it low-income housing in perpetuity, and that is to take it completely out of the private sector. That is essentially to, rather than letting the developer build, you know, 20 low-income units on site, take that money, give it to a nonprofit or to a land trust to build housing that's going to be rent-controlled in perpetuity. Now, the problem...
Would any of that happen, though, under Prop A or Prop K?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
That's how... When the city builds affordable housing, it doesn't contract with a for-profit developer. It contracts with nonprofit developers who, as their mission and in their charter, build permanently affordable housing. All right. Now, in terms of rent control, the state of California, unfortunately, has taken away from cities the ability to pass good rent control. We can't have rent control that applies to vacant apartments, and we can't have rent control on anything that's built after 1979. And that's because of very bad state law. The state has basically, you know, undercut the ability of cities to deal with this housing crisis.
All right. Well, thank you, Pat. I'm so glad you brought that up because there's some confusion around that. There's also some questions about A. Denise says that rent is skyrocketing and landlords could pass on half of the cost of the bond of Prop A they pay to their tenants. Building affordable housing with this bond is a joke. If the full bond was dedicated to building affordable housing, only 620 units could be built. And what about the other promises in this bond? We have another question about Prop A from Glenn in San Francisco. Hi, Glenn.
Hello. I'm referring to Mr. Kopp's objection to Proposition A, where he talks about the maze and the shalls in the section that deals with how the funds are going to be allocated, and that he thinks that if they're not mandatory with the shalls, that the funds might be used for some other purpose. And I also want to say that people that rent their room out for the 200 days a year could have a lodger. I got a document from Nolo Press about California lodgers.
Okay, so the argument is, how can we be certain that the $320 million will actually be spent on affordable housing and not something else?
Well, you know, there's always a chance in anything the government does that something will go wrong. On the other hand, there's going to be tremendous oversight, and people are going to be watching this very, very carefully. So, you know, while I'm not one to say, oh, just trust City Hall, I think in this one, that's not a big concern.
We've got an email from Bernie in Noe Valley who says, until something is done to control the rapid growth of San Francisco's budget, I will be voting against all bond funding. Besides the fact that we pay almost double overtime for bond-funded projects, they often provide short-term gains at the expense of long-term costs that are passed on to future generations of taxpayers. He says that is nothing short of thievery.
Well, whenever you borrow money and the city has to borrow money, the federal government borrows money, the state borrows money to build stuff. And we have been doing this for generations. And the previous caller said the costs are going to be passed on to tenants. Actually, that's not true with Prop A because there will be no additional taxes to be passed on to tenants. So, I mean, we could have an argument about whether bond spending is the best way to spend money. But the reality is that's how cities traditionally build stuff.
All right. Thank you for that, Tim. Let's talk about Proposition D, Mission Rock Development Initiative. If it is approved, Prop D would authorize the increase of building height limits to between 190 and 240 feet in the location called Mission Rock. The current height limits in the area are 90 for office and retail use, 120 for housing. The Proposition D would also allow the Mission Rock development to move forward, which includes 1,500 residential units. And first off, anything else to add about D? What else it would do if it passes?
I think it's just important to mention that Proposition D is a proposal to develop public lands. This is port property, which means it's owned by the people of the city and county of San Francisco. So when we're talking about this, we should be talking about the maximum amount of public good to address the housing crisis again. So the Sierra Club is actually opposed to Proposition D, and the reason we are is because this increases height limits to quite high. 240 feet is very, very tall. And you're looking at something that's only 33% affordable, middle, and moderate income. So not even all 33% affordable low-income housing. 33% of this housing provided by this measure would be for middle and moderate income folks. And that means people making over up to $150,000 a year. So it's not really affordable for the average San Franciscan.
And not really affordable for the average San Franciscan. The height is interesting because the skyline is changing so quickly in San Francisco. What is comparable to 240 feet? Would you say it's the building next to the Bay Bridge?
Recon Tower, that's probably about 240 feet.
Okay, so this would be as tall, because that's one of the tallest buildings right now.
It's also on top of a hill, so it looks taller than it is.
Okay.
But it's a tall and it's a hideous thing.
Yeah. So this is very tall on the waterfront. The voters of San Francisco have already expressed that they are concerned about large buildings on our waterfront. Our waterfront is a tremendous asset for the people, all of us. And to build these huge towers there is something the Sierra Club is really concerned about. Like, what are the trade-offs? Not that necessarily we shouldn't have tall towers or we shouldn't have infill development, but if we're going to do it, what is the public benefit that we need in order to justify these huge towers?
And what's the time frame here? When is this supposed to be complete? Do we know?
I'm not actually sure.
Oh, it's going to take many years, a project of this type. It's a 10 or 15-year project, I would guess. Although I believe they're going to build the housing first. And actually, thanks to Supervisor Jane Kim, the below market rate housing number is 40%, which is the highest of any project in San Francisco. But I realize that part of the challenge here is, how do you define affordable housing?
Right.
And is it and right now in this project, as in many projects, it's a spectrum. It's some for very low income people, and this one, more housing for people who are considered moderate income, but who, you know, I mean, for example, a teacher and a firefighter living together might make over $100,000 a year, but there's no possible way they could afford a place in San Francisco.
Right.
So we need all kinds of affordable housing in the city.
And so this has gone through a lot of changes because the San Francisco Giants baseball team is backing this major development project. And Jane Kim had a lot of meetings with the team and basically said, if we don't get affordable housing, we're going to fight this tooth and nail. And so that's why once she got that percentage, again, it's 40%, then she decided to back it. It's also being backed by the South Beach Mission Bay Business Association. And Tim, you'd probably know this, the San Francisco Labor Council, they gave a conditional endorsement.
They want to be sure that all the jobs are union jobs.
All right.
Now, you know, I will say that there's a lesson here. And the lesson is, no developer ever comes to the table with their best offer. And the Giants came in and said, this is the best we can do is, you know, something percentage of affordable housing. And Jane Kim said, well, then I'm going to stop you from building the project. And they immediately turned around and said, okay, we'll give you more. So that's a lesson that the city ought to learn. And too often we don't.
How much is this project? Who's the major backer?
The Giants are the major backer of this project.
And they're funding the whole project.
They are funding the whole. I mean, they'll obviously borrow money to do it. But this is a project by the San Francisco Giants. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So again, that's Prop D. Anything else?
Well, this is not just a housing project either. There's a lot of business units. There's storefronts and there's also office space in this development.
They're also selling it as a very green project. Whenever I see the flashy ads about this, there's a ton of grass and green space in the ads.
Well, I think it's important. Again, this is public land. I think part of it is actually zoned open space right now. So I think they're trying to appease the concern that you're taking away this land that's zoned open space, it's zoned public property, and it needs to look like it's a public commons. But it is public commons. So what are we going to do with the land that's actually going to have a long-term impact on the housing crisis and create some good for the people of San Francisco?
Right. Okay, so that is Proposition D. All right, let's talk about clean energy. We have an email from Tim. How can one... Well, first, we'll ask your question in a minute, Tim. Let's just go over the props. So Proposition G aims to define renewable greenhouse gas-free electricity as electricity derived exclusively from renewable resources located in or adjacent to the California border, or electricity generated by the city's Hetch Hetchy facilities. And then Proposition H would define clean energy and renewable greenhouse gas-free energy according to standards similar to the standards used by state law. And this measure would allow the city to call more of the energy produced by its community choice aggregation, Clean Power SF Clean. Sierra Club says no on G and yes on H. And this can be confusing to people.
Yes, yes. And I'm so glad you're having me on the show to help walk through people through this. Because what happened is we saw people that have been fighting Clean Power SF for a number of years now put Proposition G on the ballot as an opportunity to limit the way that Clean Power SF can market renewable energy. So why is this important? Clean Power SF is going to be a competitor to PG&E. It allows for competition in the marketplace, so San Franciscans have a choice between Clean Power SF, which will be a publicly controlled energy alternative to the investor-owned utility, PG&E. So what Proposition G does is it only changes those rules of how you can market energy for Clean Power SF, which is this newly budding renewable energy provider. PG&E would still be allowed to market its nuclear, its natural gas, and its coal energy the same way they do now. So this creates an unlevel playing field. It intentionally puts Clean Power SF at a disadvantage, and it says that it won't be able to market energy that is derived from a renewable energy credit as clean and green. But PG&E could still do that. So it really, really is just kind of an opportunity to kind of kick Clean Power SF in the shins before it gets up and running.
And according to Ballotpedia, PG&E and IBEW 1245, the union that represents many PG&E employees, funded the signature collection for Prop G. Later, the union compromised with the Board of Supervisors to result in a competing measure, Proposition H, which is now supported by both the board and IBEW, which again is the union that represents PG&E employees.
Yeah, and this was actually a really brilliant move by advocates for the Clean Power SF program. What they said was, we're going to put a measure on the ballot that's going to say that you have to properly label all sorts of energy, and that includes coal and nuclear. And IBEW said, whoa, 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 we don't want to have to say that we're using coal and nuclear power, even if it's cleaned up with RECs. Let's come up with a compromise. So what Proposition H does, which is the compromise measure, and if it gets more votes than Proposition G, it will become the law of the land. So these are competing measures, which means even if they both pass, so they get both get 50% plus one, whichever has the most votes is going to win. So we're encouraging people to vote yes on Proposition H in order to get rid of Proposition G, which is a really bad idea. And Proposition H basically says that both PG&E and Clean Power SF have to abide by the same rules. They'll market their energy under state standards. And it actually goes a little bit further to say that rooftop solar that's produced within the city and county of San Francisco, which is actually it does create a renewable energy credit when you have rooftop solar, that will be part of the clean energy product for Clean Power SF, which is really great because that's where we get a lot of localized energy. That's where we get a lot of community jobs, because these are all things that can happen within the city and county of San Francisco. So we're excited that rooftop solar will be part of the Clean Power SF renewable energy portfolio.
Okay. And so again, the San Francisco Labor Council, the community choice aggregator Clean Power SF, oppose G and support H. Oppose G and support H. And we have a question on this from Tim. How can one be sure that the electricity coming into one's home or business is from renewable sources? Aren't we all hooked up to the same PG&E wires? Wouldn't we be better off if we simply required utilities to steadily increase their generation through wind, solar, etc., until all power was generated that way?
Yes. And that is part of what we're fighting for. Part of creating competition in the market means that these utilities will now have to compete with one another. And if San Franciscans want green energy, they're going to say, well, where is this energy produced? What type of energy mix is it? You know, we could even go so far as to say, do you want wind or do you want solar? Do you want tidal? Do you want geothermal? We need more energy alternatives. So that is part of the big plan. And there are state mandates to get us to a cleaner renewable portfolio standard. So we're continuously cleaning up the grid. Right now, while these programs are launching, it is better to have renewable energy produced somewhere and be using renewable energy that maybe it was consumed, you know, in Southern California because, you know, there was a higher demand there that day. So it's still important that overall, because, you know, this is all about greenhouse gas emissions, and no matter where it's emitted, these greenhouse gases do have an impact on climate change.
Okay.
So.
And it's important to note that we do have state standards, but PG&E isn't even meeting the very modest state standards. And as long as they keep generating a lot of their power from nuclear power plants from Diablo Canyon, they're not going to ever meet the state standards. So that's why Clean Power SF is so important, and why PG&E, by the way, is so freaked out about it and has been trying to find ways to destroy it and to damage it and convince people not to sign up with Clean Power SF.
Yeah. I think it's also important that San Franciscans take a stand on Prop G and Prop H, because there are community choice aggregation programs, community choice energy programs popping up all over the region. So this is an issue in San Francisco, but you have listeners in the South Bay and in the East Bay. East Bay Clean Power is going to come online in the next 2 years. Contra Costa is considering their own renewable energy alternative. Marin Clean Energy is up and running and is now servicing Napa as well as portions of Contra Costa County. So the South Bay is also looking at their own renewable energy alternative. So if forces that are opposed to competition in the energy market are successful in San Francisco, we're going to see measures like this all over the ballot next year.
Okay, great. So that's, again, G and H. Today, we're talking with Michelle Myers, director for the San Francisco Bay Chapter of the Sierra Club, Tim Redmond, founder and editor of 48 Hills. We only have a few minutes. Just quickly on the District 3 race. It's one of the most expensive supervisor races in San Francisco. According to the Chronicle, former supervisor Aaron Peskin, who's trying to win his old seat back and would vote on the progressive bloc, has spent $436,000. And then Julie Christensen, who was appointed by Ed Lee and votes with Mayor Ed Lee, has raised $378,000. And Tim, excuse me, you have a piece on 48 Hills about who's funding these campaigns. Just quickly.
Well, it's not just what the candidates have raised, because money that candidates raise has to be in no more than $500 increments, and corporations are not allowed to give money to the... So what's happening is we're seeing a lot of what they call independent expenditure money. And the Christensen campaign and the anti-Aaron Peskin campaign will end up spending over $1 million, a lot of it coming from big real estate and big tech. And we have one guy named Thomas Coates, who is a Republican who has spent much of his adult life trying to destroy rent control in California, who just dropped $125,000 into the anti-Aaron Peskin campaign. So you can see, you know, I mean, if you talk about politicians and you talk about having to dance with the ones that brung you, you can see where that money is coming from. Aaron Peskin has also raised a substantial amount of money and also has outside spending. The outside spending for Aaron Peskin tends to come from labor. That's the bigger source of money from him. So you've got labor unions on one side, and you've got real estate developers and big tech, Ron Conway, the real wealthy power brokers in San Francisco on the other side.
And again, this is District 3, Chinatown, Fisherman's Wharf, and North Beach. And this will determine the future of the progressive voting bloc in San Francisco, right, for the next couple of years?
Many of the votes on the Board of Supervisors in the last year have been 6-5 in favor of the mayor's agenda and against the more progressive agenda. And if Aaron Peskin is elected, in many cases, it will go the other way. Not always. I mean, there's 7-4 votes, and it goes different ways. But in general, on the big, tough ones, it tends to be 6-5 right now.
All right. So that is District 3. KALW City Visions had a debate between Peskin and Christensen a couple of nights ago. You can find it at kalw.org. KALW Cross Currents has been interviewing Mayor Ed Lee's 5 challengers, Kent Graham, Francisco Herrera, Reed Martin, Stuart Shuffman, who goes by Brokeass Stewart, and Amy Farrow Weiss. They haven't really been getting much attention at all in local media. KALW has interviewed all of them. And they are, though, getting endorsements, for example, from various groups. Ed Lee has 14 endorsements. Amy Farrow Weiss has 12 endorsements, including SEIU 1021, the San Francisco Women's Political Committee. Tim, the establishment media in San Francisco, which includes you, has been criticized for not taking these people seriously.
I don't know if I count as establishment media. I'd like to think I'm pretty established.
Alternative establishment media in San Francisco.
I hope I'm pretty established. part of the reason is there's so much on the ballot that every vote is going to count on. In District 3, every single vote is going to count. On Prop F, Prop I, these things are things that can actually make a significant difference in people's lives, and every single vote's going to count. And frankly, while I appreciate the fact that people have taken on Ed Lee, I appreciate the fact that they're exercising democracy and that they're out there, there is virtually no chance that any of these folks will even come close to winning. So I think a lot of the media are focusing on the election issues that are likely to make a difference. You know, and again, I have no problem with the people who are running for mayor against Ed Lee. Good for them for running. But, you know, I always say, if you're going to play in the World Series, you need a little Sandlot experience. And one of the reasons they're not getting attention is that these are not candidates who have spent years and years and years developing a community base, possibly running for other offices, getting involved. So, you know, people are going to look at them and say, you know, you're not going to win. And I hate to say that on the radio. I hate to be discouraging to people. And if you don't like Ed Lee, you should vote for his opponents, whoever they are. If you don't like the mayor, vote for somebody else. But it's going to be very, very difficult for them to get much traction.
Well, so we do have ranked choice voting, and there's a big push for 1, 2, 3, anybody but Ed Lee.
Right.
And I'm seeing it in social media. It's getting a lot of traction.
No, that's what the Bay Guardian said, right. Anybody but Ed Lee. And I, you know, that's a very strong position to take. It's going to be a big, big lift.
Well, again, so Mayor Ed Lee faces five challengers: Kent Graham, Francisco Herrera, Reed Martin, Stuart Shuffman, and Amy Farrah Weiss. And the interview with all of the other candidates, you can find those at KALW.org. The interview with Amy Farrah Weiss will air tonight on Cross Current. So I hope you can tune in for that. Quick final thoughts on why people should vote next Tuesday.
Because your city depends on it. The future of the city depends tremendously on what happens. And you know, there's times when you look at things and you say, oh, my vote doesn't count. You know, oh, California's always going to vote for the Democrat for president. Oh, you know, why is it bother to get out of my chair and go vote? In this election, every vote is going to count. So many of these things are going to be so close.
Michelle, yeah. Quick thoughts?
Just again, it's a low turnout election, so that means every vote really will count. And we're looking for, in Prop G and H, no on G, yes on H. And the more votes that H gets, it'll nullify G. So just a couple votes will go a long way.
Michelle Myers is director of the San Francisco Bay chapter of the Sierra Club. Tim Redmond is founder and editor of 48 Hills and just acquired rights to the Bay Guardian, where he was editor for 32 years. Thank you both for coming in.
Of course. Happy to be on your show.
Thanks for having us, Rose.
And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, we'll discuss how California can end fossil fuel extraction and embrace 100% wind and solar. Is that possible in the country's third largest oil-producing state? Stanford scientist Mark Jacobson and the Center for Biological Diversity's Castle Siegel have a plan. They say to avoid climate change's worst dangers, California must halt fracking, move away from dirty fossil fuel extraction, and embrace a clean energy future. So how can we get there? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihe Raz is on as senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.